Good afternoon, America. Welcome to Mark Levine's Inside Scoop on Washington, where we bring you all the news from the nation's capital that the government does not want you to know. And I'm sure that the government, run by the Bush administration, would not like you to have watched the debate last night, the first debate between George Bush and John Kerry. They'd just as soon you forget it. They tried very hard to spin their way out of it, to claim that George Bush won the debate. But the people have spoken. The message is clear. Poll after poll after poll has shown that the American people believe that John Kerry won the debate. And this was crucial. John Kerry had had a tough month and a half. It was very important for John Kerry to come out swinging, to come out aggressively challenging the president's policy, but doing so in a way that was respectful to the president, I think. And I think John Kerry managed to walk that very fine tightrope. And hey, you just don't have to take my word for it. Just look at my blog. It is covered with comment after comment praising John Kerry and his performance in the debate. I'll be reading some of those comments on air in just a minute. But I want to talk with you this hour about the debate. What did you think happened? Who do you think won and why? And we'll definitely talk about style. A lot of the comments on the blog focus on the fact that Kerry looked composed and reasonable and presidential, and George Bush looked annoyed and petulant and really not wanting to be there. But also, I think we need to talk about substance. What is it about what Kerry said that was persuasive to you? What is it about what Bush said that wasn't persuasive to you? And hey, if you're one of my conservative listeners and you're in the audience and you think I'm wrong, that all the comments on the blog are dead wrong, we invite you to call in as well and tell us, why do you think we're wrong? Did you really think Bush won the debate? Hey, I even heard on Fox News where conservatives lamenting that Bush lost the debate. It's kind of hard to spin this one, but I want to hear from you no matter what you think. The toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP, and I want to encourage you to call in early because coming up later on in the hour, I'm going to have as a guest Paul Friedman. Now, Paul Friedman is a Navy veteran. He's in the Navy for 6 years, and he actually served on the USS Lincoln, the ship that George Bush landed on when he proclaimed mission accomplished in Iraq in March of this year, when he said that the major combat operations were over, that in the war in Iraq we have prevailed. You'll be able to hear from a guy on the ship what he thought of that, what he thought of the debate, and what he thought, and I think this is an important thing, what he thought about Bush's repeated comments, and they may have been his strongest in the night, saying that John Kerry, by criticizing the war, was actually harming our soldiers' efforts in it. George Bush repeatedly quoted John Kerry's line when he said it was the wrong war at the wrong place at the wrong time. And Bush was saying, hey, that means that he can't lead the troops out of it. That if you disagree with a war, if you disagree with the tactics of a war, if you disagree with the way a war is being fought, then if you take over, no one will listen to you, the troops won't follow you, the world won't believe you, you won't be able to stand firm. And I want to know if you think that Kerry answered that charge. Did he respond to Bush's charge? Again, the number is toll-free 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. Or you can do as so many of you have done already and contribute to the blog. All you have to do is go to www.radioinsidescoop.com. and click on today's show and say what you will. There are so many blog comments, frankly, I won't be able to get to them all. But I do want to start by reading some of them to you. All right, let's just go through some of the ones we have. We have one by Christina. She writes, I was impressed by Kerry's outstanding performance and clear, credible messages in tonight's debate. They stood in stark contrast to President Bush, who appeared unprepared, unsteady, and notably less intelligent than his opponent. One of my favorite blog entries was one by Jason. Jason writes, hi, I know you'll get a lot of spin around the debate, but I wanted to tell you what it did for me, an average, not-so-political guy. Here's what I got out of it. George Bush, being president is hard. It's hard work. John Kerry, you've made a mess in Iraq. I'll clean it up. Bush, how can you undermine our boys in Iraq by saying this war is wrong? Kerry, I want to honor them and keep them alive by fighting a smarter fight. Bush, but, blinks many times. You keep changing your mind. You know what? Kerry's not the only one who's changed his mind. I've changed my mind about Bush, too. He's out of his depth. We need a grown-up in the White House now more than ever. Smirks and slogans and slurs are all Bush has got, and he showed me beyond a shadow of a doubt in that debate. Kerry's got my vote. I want to play for you some of the debate highlights. There's a lot to play. There were a lot of highlights in the debate. But let's start with one of the early statements that Kerry made. I think when he really set out the terms of debate and made it clear that we really were not fighting the right war at the right time. Let's listen to John Kerry.
I believe in being strong and resolute and determined. And I will hunt down and kill the terrorists wherever they are. But we also have to be smart, Jim. And smart means not diverting your attention from the real war on terror in Afghanistan against Osama bin Laden and taking it off to Iraq, where the 9/11 Commission confirms there was no connection to 9/11 itself in Saddam Hussein, and where the reason for going to war was weapons of mass destruction, not the removal of Saddam Hussein. This president has made, I regret to say, a colossal error of judgment. And judgment is what we look for in the president of the United States of America. I'm proud that important military figures are supporting me in this race. Former Chairman Joint Chiefs of Staff John Shalikashvili. Just yesterday, General Eisenhower's son, General John Eisenhower, endorsed me. General Admiral William Crowell. General Tony McPeak, who ran the Air Force war so effectively for his father, all believe I would make a stronger commander-in-chief. And they believe it because they know I would not take my eye off of the goal, Osama bin Laden. Unfortunately, he escaped in the mountains of Tora Bora. We had him surrounded. But we didn't use American forces, the best trained in the world, to go kill him. The president relied on Afghan warlords, and he outsourced that job, too. That's wrong.
Well, that was a powerful statement right there, and one that really has not been talked about very much by anyone that I've heard in the last couple of years, except perhaps myself, and that is that we did have a chance to get Osama bin Laden. I've heard conservatives talk about in the Clinton years how we should have gotten Osama bin Laden, but Bush had him trapped. Bush had him in Tora Bora. He was trapped, and what did we do? Well, John Kerry's absolutely right. We rejected a plan. George Bush rejected a plan that was provided to him by the Pentagon to send conventional ground forces into those mountains, the White Mountains, to search for bin Laden. He felt that, I guess, the cold weather was too much. I don't know. But he decided to use it to pay money for Afghan troops to do the job. Now, you know, if Afghan troops are going to do the job and we have the entire place surrounded, that's one thing. But we didn't have it surrounded. And the murderer of 3,000 Americans, the guy who killed 3,000 Americans and his organization, he escaped. He escaped. And I think that, again, John Kerry very clearly pointed out something I put on this program again and again and again that people apparently don't seem to realize, and that is the ratio of troops between Iraq and Afghanistan. I remember a year ago on this show, I went on air and I asked a trivia question. I said, who can name to me the proportion of troops in Afghanistan or Iraq? I reminded them that Afghanistan is 50% bigger than Iraq. Afghanistan's the size of Texas. Iraq's about the size of California. Afghanistan also has a larger population than Iraq. And I remind them of this, and I said, what do you think the troop levels are? Do you think we got twice as many troops in Afghanistan, an equal number between the two? And I had people guess. They guessed all kinds of things. The one that got closest was the one that guessed four times the troops in Iraq than Afghanistan. But John Kerry's right. It's closer to 7 to 10 times the troops in Iraq to Afghanistan. That is, John Kerry asks, does that mean that Saddam Hussein is 10 times more dangerous than Osama bin Laden? This president didn't have his priorities straight. And really, it's the first time I've heard very clearly John Kerry say these things, or perhaps I should say, in fairness to Kerry, first time I've seen the media report him saying these things. And so again, I want to hear from you. I want to know what you think. The toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. And I also want to welcome my guest to the program. His name is Paul Friedman, and he served in the Navy for 6 years. He served on the USS Lincoln. He was there on the ship when George Bush landed, when they had that grand poster with the sign, Mission Accomplished. And I want to get his view from, really, what are the guys and gals in the military, what are they thinking about our choices? Our fight in Afghanistan, our fight in Iraq. He fought in both wars. And we're going to find out and hear from him. And if you want to call him, again, all you have to do is dial toll-free, 877-57-SCOOP. Hey, Paul, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Hi, thank you very much.
Well, tell me this. You were on the USS Lincoln. What was it like to be there when the president arrived? Were people excited? Were they happy?
Absolutely. We were, we were coming back from a 9.5 month-long deployment, and we were all just very excited that he, our commander-in-chief, would choose to come be with us and come talk to us. So we felt it was a great privilege, and we were all very happy, and we celebrated with him while he was there.
Now, you fought in both Afghanistan and Iraq, right?
Yes. On our deployment, we had Operation Enduring Freedom and then also Iraqi Freedom.
And was there any indication, among the people on the ship? I remember back here, I was working in Congress at the time, it was very clear all Americans really bonded together to support, to fight the war in Afghanistan, to fight against Al-Qaeda. And then, about a year later, Iraq suddenly came up. Maybe it wasn't even a year, but it just suddenly seemed to come up from nowhere.
Out of the blue.
And it suddenly, Saddam Hussein was the enemy, and I was thinking, well, why aren't we going after Osama? And suddenly, the press and the people and everyone seemed to focus on Iraq. And I remember at the time being quite surprised that here's this sort of old festering conflict, this guy that we had contained. It was, a really nasty guy, but wasn't, a huge threat to the United States, not like the people that took down the World Trade Center, that suddenly we were focused on him. Did people in the military ask these same kinds of questions?
Well, we did. Although being deployed on the ship, we didn't really have access to all the news media outlets that the normal people have. But from what we could see, and with Colin Powell's speech, that going there was necessary in order to defend freedom. And it was a necessary step, a logical step. So that's what we thought. We originally thought that Afghanistan was the main purpose. But then once we had all the information saying that there are these weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, then we at that point we felt, well, then I guess it's important to go there.
Do you think most of the military believed that Saddam Hussein had some connection with 9/11 and that was part of the reason we were there?
I think that was all dependent on Colin Powell's speech. I think beforehand, we didn't really have too much evidence, and then based on his speech and all the other factors around that time, we saw that he was connected, which later turned out to be false, to have all these big these weapons and this great capacity to do evil. So I think afterwards, after a certain time, we all it was ingrained in us that it was necessary to go there.
Now, Paul, the speech you're talking about is the speech that Colin Powell made before the United Nations. Is that the one?
Yes, that's correct.
The speech that he's later apologized for getting so many things incorrect.
Exactly.
Tell me this. You were in Iraq, or at least on the ship, USS Lincoln, past the mission accomplished banner. You were there longer after that?
Well,
How long? Yeah. When did you leave the Iraqi theater of
we
war?
We left approximately, I would say, March of 2003.
Okay, so you left actually around the time that George Bush was proclaiming victory.
Yes.
Okay, and at that time I assume most people thought, well, that's it, we've wiped up Iraq, it's over, we're going home, that was sort of the end of it.
Oh yeah, we figured, how lucky we are to be the first ones home after this conflict is done, and as Bush said, the combat operations were finished, we thought, no more lives would be lost. Battle and things were under control and things were all set, but only later did we realize that it wasn't under control and we had no plan to get out. And
I presume no one got to you the CIA documents that the president had saying that they expect the post-war, the post after Saddam Hussein is removed, at that time would be far worse and far more dangerous and far more lives lost than before the war. I assume no one discussed anything like that with you.
No, they tend not to discuss that on the Armed Forces television network.
Yeah, I understand the Armed Forces television network has one partisan speaker on it. His name is Rush Limbaugh, and no one's saying the kinds of things that I say. It's amazing that, did you know, folks, that your taxpayer dollars pays to put Rush Limbaugh on Armed Forces radio, but doesn't pay to put anyone else on the other side? So now, I guess, have your political views changed then from, say, 2 years ago then to today?
Paul? Absolutely. Actually, 4 years ago, I voted for George Bush.
Okay.
And I was a diehard Republican, and I believe that, this is the man who will set things straight and has a plan for our future. But only later did I realize that he had no plan, and he had just, it, to me it just seemed like he didn't have the capacity to think things through and to realize if something was going wrong that he, it was okay to change it and rate it, oh, it was all right to go a different path. But it just seems like he's very stubborn, and he wants to just continue just for the sake of continuing the conflict, and doesn't really take a look at doesn't really look at the lives lost on a personal level. And I don't think it's very important to him. It just seems to me that way.
You know, one of the things that pollsters are looking at very clearly in this race is the veteran vote, and also those that are currently in the armed services. You have, of course, John Kerry with his distinguished record in Vietnam that they tried to smear. But the documents all show that John Kerry earned his medals, and in fact, so does everyone who was there at the time. And then, of course, you've got George Bush, who was absent without leave from the National Guard. Still, there's no evidence he showed up for his duty, and in fact, the evidence is that he didn't. And
even with the award pending on that.
Excuse me?
Even with the award pending for evidence.
Yes, there's actually $50,000. I might as well repeat that on the air. If anyone.
They raised it.
Yes, it's now 50. It started in 2000 as, I think, $4,000. It's now $50,000 for anyone who can credibly say they saw George Bush in Alabama in the National Guard during the time when he wasn't there. I've actually reported on this program something that's really gotten very little press, and that is he was doing community service in Houston at the time, which was very much out of character for a guy like George W. Bush. And the reason why I believe, and I think there's a lot of evidence pointing this way, that he was doing community service is because of his high alcohol and drug use. J.H. Hatfield has written that George Bush was charged with cocaine, and in order to get that conviction expunged from his record, had to do the community service. What's interesting in this is that the White House has never denied this charge, never. There's a wonderful exchange, in fact, on my website for anyone who's new to the show. Can go to the February 15th entry in the archives and see a wonderful exchange between veteran reporter Helen Thomas and Press Secretary Scott McClellan, where she's asking him, hey, is it true that George Bush, the reason why he wasn't flying is because basically he was too coked up at the time. Now, she put it in nicer words, but he was too high on alcohol and drugs. And Scott McClellan's comments are, oh, that's offensive. Oh, I can't believe you raised that. And Helen Thomas said, well, just deny it. Just say it's not true and we'll move on. He said, I just can't believe you'd raise this question. He never actually could deny it. They go around for 10, 15 minutes. And again, I urge everyone to check that out on the website. But not to get too far afield, because of their pasts, of course, John Kerry fought in Vietnam and then turned around to oppose the war. George Bush supported others fighting in Vietnam, didn't want to fight himself. And now, of course, today, they have very differing views on the war in Iraq. Yet veterans and people in the armed forces have tended for decades now to vote Republican. Most people in the military do vote Republican. Do you think that this race we will see a difference? We will see a greater number of people in the military and veterans voting for John Kerry than we have in the past?
I think that may be the case because of just the fact of just seeing his reckless regard for where to put lives and where to direct his aggression, and I think he's using it. He's trying to get. I can think one of the quotes earlier was that he was trying to avenge the Saddam Hussein for trying to kill his father, and just using us for that purpose is just kind of is very just disrespectful and spiteful, and I just can't believe that someone would, a commander in chief would think like that.
I guess what I want to know from you, Paul, is I assume you keep in contact with your brothers in arms, so to speak, don't you now?
Yes,
still?
Yes.
What are people saying? I mean, I understand the military tends to be a more conservative group. They tend to be the kinds of people from from rural areas and from more conservative. They tend to be more religious, and so there are reasons, cultural reasons, why people in the military would be more likely to support the Republicans. But what are your friends saying? Are they questioning? Is it half and half? Have any of them watched the debates? What are people saying?
Well, I guess the ones that I was close with are pretty active operationally, so they don't really have too much time to vote to that. But back to what you were saying before with regards to the general makeup, it does seem that it's very, very, it's somewhat conservative in that the makeup, people tend not to question the leadership. Because it's kind of ingrained in you that that would be wrong, and that would be, how can you question your leaders and when they're ordering you to do something? So, I think on one level that people don't do that just for the sake of retribution or for just harm down the road. So they tend to just stay with the status quo and what everyone else believes and what they think they're taught to believe, that, you know, just don't question it and it'll be okay, and, you know, just do your job and don't complain.
Why?
So, but as far as some of my friends, a lot of them are upset that we have our commander in chief who's sending us out there and in a reckless fashion and is making mistakes and is just not admitting the mistakes and is just continuing to just endanger lives for a reason that really people can't seem to understand, and they don't really think that it's worth it. I don't think that it's worth it to keep doing that.
If you're on a ship and you actually support John Kerry for president, is that something you're going to keep secret?
Yeah, you know, that's not something you want to. You don't want to put a sticker on your rack, on your bed, you know, in the birthing area, something like that. It's just because it seems like you're the black sheep and you're the one going against the grain and you know, literally or you know, just rocking the boat, so
yeah,
so to speak.
Would people have Bush stickers on? Or is this
politics? Yeah, I think that would be more common. It's just it's a direct view that you're supporting your commanders and your leaders, and it's just you seem like you're the good follower.
Now, were you in the Navy back when Bill Clinton was president?
I was.
Did you find there was a difference then? After all, our leader was a Democrat. He was Bill Clinton. Could you then, you know, be very supportive of Clinton, or was it sort of no? You always got to be with the Republicans.
Well, I think in that it was the same case then. It was most people just didn't really want to side with anyone else. They wanted to side with whoever their leader was at the time.
Oh, so they were siding with Bill Clinton then,
even
though he was of a different party. All right, well, at least that's consistent. That's good. And so we have to go to commercial break. If you want to call in and comment on the debate, or you want to ask a question of Paul Friedman, or you want to challenge me, or just make a comment on what you think happened in the debate, all you have to do is dial 877-57-SCOOP, toll-free, 877-57-SCOOP, and we'll be back with more of the Inside Scoop right after this.
For a guy who brags about being a Texas rancher, George W. sure is stepping in a lot of cow patties with his Iraqi policy. There was that big one about needing to oust Saddam because he had weapons of mass destruction. He didn't. Then there was Bush's claim that the Iraqi people would throw kisses and rose petals at our troops. They didn't. But perhaps the slickest and stinkiest cow patty that George has stepped in is his choice of allies to pursue his Iraqi adventure. By cozying up to regimes that are repressive and dictatorial, he has undermined any claim that his foreign policy is on the moral high road. In only 1 week in September, three of Bush's global buddies revealed themselves to be the very opposite of freedom fighters and democracy builders. First came Russian President Vladimir Putin, claiming, a la Bush, Cheney, Ashcroft, Rumsfeld, and gang, that global terrorism warrants extreme measures. Putin unilaterally changed the way Russia's 89 regional governors and its legislators are chosen, effectively preventing opposition to his policies. Next was the Bush family's longtime pals, the royals of Saudi Arabia. Their use of religious police to repress Shiite Muslims, Jews, and Christians is so severe that even George's own State Department had to censure them, declaring flatly that freedom of religion does not exist there. Then there's General Musharraf, who stole democracy from Pakistan in a military coup 5 years ago. Ironically, Bush now hugs him as his close ally in his war to bring democracy to Iraq. Earlier this year, Musharraf pledged to give up his post as head of the military while also serving as president. Now, he has reneged, suddenly declaring that it's in the best interest of the nation that he wear both hats. This is Jim Hightower saying, America's credibility in the world is sinking because while George talks about democracy, he walks with autocrats.
Larry King here. You've heard me talk about Ester C. Well, now you can get more from your vitamin E. Introducing the advanced protection of Ester E from the makers of Ester C. Ester E's breakthrough form protects its antioxidant strength until your body is ready to use it. So do what I do and get more from your E. Take new Ester E, E-S-T-E-R-E. Are you getting advanced protection from your vitamin E?
And now, look for new Ester E where fine vitamins are sold.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
But who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back. Guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's. Know who's really gelling? The King of Queens. Monday through Friday. Check your local listings.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. We had a great debate last night between George Bush and John Kerry. The overwhelming evidence seems to be that John Kerry won the debate, but I want to hear what you think. The toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. My guest is Paul Friedman. He's a six-year Navy veteran. He was on the USS Lincoln when George Bush landed. He voted for George Bush in 2000, but he's changed his mind, and he's supporting John Kerry this time around. Again, the number is 877-57-SCOOP. Caller, you're on the line with Mark Levine and Paul Friedman.
Hey, it's your big new fan out on the West Coast, Dave.
Hey, Mark, Dave, how are you?
I enjoyed the debate last night. I thought that Bush, I had anticipated that he would actually do worse. He remained on his feet. He didn't really drool. He didn't put out anything about lovemaking gynecologists or anything, but I definitely felt that Kerry presented his issues much better. I wanted to relive with you just one brief moment of that debate,
sure,
which I think is significant. I haven't heard anybody speaking of it. And that is that Bush was talking about his plan for an exit from Iraq, and then it switched over to Kerry, who said, but then you are in the process of constructing 14 of the world's largest military bases right there in Iraq.
Right.
Isn't that going to cause some people to arrive at a different conclusion?
Yeah, they're going to think that maybe you want to stay. Maybe you don't want to leave.
Maybe Halliburton has a long-term plan for you there. Yes, that was the way I thought. Maybe some people are going to arrive at a different conclusion.
I actually thought it was very brave of John Kerry to mention that, because I think that our Americans will think, oh, well, hey, we might as well have more military bases around the world. And it was very brave for John Kerry to point out that maybe the Iraqi people should have a say in the matter, and maybe they wouldn't want military bases. But I want to give our guest a chance to speak. I don't know what he thinks about this. Paul, what do you think about the idea that we're in Iraq to get military bases, and is that okay?
I think that's just a bad strategic move. I don't think the Iraqis want us there. It's evident that they don't want us there, and just be building more permanent structures in that area, I think it's just asking for trouble.
Okay. Well, Dave, I think it's a solid point that you make. I do.
Another thought, if I might, on that. How in the world does he plan to staff 14 of the world's largest military bases when our soldiers are spread so thin right now? We got a draft coming down if he's reelected.
Well, already we have a backdoor draft, as I'm sure you know, Dave. We have people in the National Guard who are supposed to end their tours of duty, have not been allowed to end their tours of duty, and in fact they are, in effect, being drafted, and that's why we're having such recruitment troubles in the National Guard. But it's a broader question, and I think actually one of the things that surprised me and pleased me, although it may not please some on the far left, I don't know, that John Kerry actually wants to increase the size of our military. He recognizes that, like it or not, we're in Iraq. It's not a war he would have chosen, wrong place, wrong time, but we're there, we're overstretched, and we can't be strong enough to be any credible threat to Iran or North Korea or all these countries that really are posing a danger to the United States if we don't have a couple more divisions. So John Kerry actually would increase the size of the military, and I actually think at this point, given the mistake that George Bush making us, getting us there, that that's the right thing to do. I don't know. Do you agree, Dave?
Well, I think he's in a way saying we broke it, now we've got to fix it.
Exactly.
But I think he's also, if he's not saying it directly, certainly getting the message. If it had been Al Gore, if it had been myself, if it had been Bill Clinton, we would not be in this war.
I think you're right.
Wished it didn't happen, but now we're there, we got to do something. I wish to heck he could say my first thing when I get elected will be to look for the first way out of Iraq. we should not be there. We never should have been there.
Well, I think he is looking for a way out. I actually agree with John Kerry that you can't just immediately withdraw all the troops. That would, again, it's sort of like a something I call my bedtime story that I did a week ago. You can find it on the archive, where I put things in very simple terms, that George Bush ignored a threat. In that case, it was a bear, and he took a hornet's nest and hit over the head with a bat and said, "Now, you know, John Kerry, you clean it up." He does have to clean it up, and it's a shame that he does. But I think that the presidential, the right thing to do is to do his best to clean up the mess that we shouldn't have gotten into.
Hey, pretty much saying, though, we should not have done this. We should not
right.
have gone.
Well, what he's saying, I think, is that he authorized the president to go because he understands that to give the president the threat of war can often lead to really good negotiations
yeah.
for peace. And after all, that's what Bush originally promised. He'd go to the UN, he would seek alliances, he would seek to have the inspections, and if they found weapons of mass destruction, then they could go in, and all, of course, all of those things that he broke. But hey, thanks very much for your call,
thanks,
Dave. I appreciate
Mark.
It. Paul, let me ask you, and I know you can't stay on too much longer, but did you see the debate? What did you think?
I did. I thought Kerry did an excellent job of defining his points and his views, and it was very evident that he could be a great commander-in-chief.
Now, do you think that people on our ships across the world have had a chance to see this debate? I mean, are they gathering around their TVs and watching this kind of thing?
Well, I'm pretty sure it might have been... Well, I don't know for sure, but... usually important political things in that caliber are transmitted to all the ships and all the units abroad. And if people did have a free chance, they would have been able to
I guess what I'm trying to understand is, and I admit I haven't been in the military, but I mean, you're not really supposed to talk about politics, right? I mean, obviously there is a chain of command. You've got to follow what your sergeant or lieutenant or all the way up, major, colonel, general orders you to do, and I understand the necessity for that. We civilians have the privilege of being able to speak out and say, hey, you know, I don't like what the president's doing. If you do that in the military, well, that's I don't know, you do it badly enough, could get you court-martialed, right? I mean, you can't really say openly, in a real clear way, I disagree with the president, can you?
You can't be political wearing the uniform.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's a rule.
So you can take off the uniform, be political, and then put the uniform back on.
Exactly. You can go to a rally in your plain clothes, and that would be all right.
Okay. But, of course, when you're on a ship in the waters of the Persian Gulf or wherever, it's not
yeah,
like
especially you. During the conflict and you start speaking out against your commanders, then that just would seem like, it's very counter to everything that everyone else is doing.
It's just interesting to me because there's such a big overseas vote, and I expect there'll be... I mean, we know that in Florida, for example, if it were not for the military vote, I mean, of course, as I've said on this show many times, Gore won Florida, but the difference, even in that 537 margin, there was 2,000 votes that Bush got overseas
mm-hmm.
from Floridians. That made the difference, along with many other things, Nader, the Supreme Court, you know, denying black people the right to vote, a bunch of other things. But the point is that the military made the difference, and it's interesting to me that you're not really allowed to disagree with the president while you're on that ship. And so even if you have an idea that's different, you can't really express it. And so the sort of the group mentality takes hold, and then you got a chance to vote. It's kind of a strange situation. I don't know. I don't really...
Yeah, exactly. And you don't really have the capability to be as informed on the issues as possible. So it's just kind of going with the crowd is what a lot of people do.
Of course, things get even worse when you have Rush Limbaugh on the Armed Forces Radio and you don't have Al Franken or me or anybody else to give the other side, particularly since Limbaugh gets so many things wrong.
Yeah, or the Fox News Channel being beamed out to us.
Do you get the Fox News Channel?
Yes, we do.
Do you get CNN and MSNBC or only the Fox News Channel?
Well, I remember that was the Fox News Channel was on all the time.
Interesting.
I don't recall the other stations being on.
You know, it's just an amazing bit of propaganda that the President of the United States can do. So tell me this, what are you doing now? You have publicly stated your support for John Kerry, right?
Yes.
What are you doing to help the Kerry campaign?
Well, he was just down at my school just the other day for a rally. Or his Max Cleland was down for a rally down here. So we went out and helped support him and helped try to register people to vote and try to tell people what the truth is.
Hey, Paul, thank you very much for coming here on the Inside Scoop. I want to get back to some debate analysis, but I really appreciate your contribution.
Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity.
Thanks again for calling in. I do want to read what many of the bloggers have had to say, and I want to get back and play some of the things that were said in the debate. I was particularly struck by what John Kerry had to say about Homeland Security. Now, admittedly, that's my favorite topic. I was on the committee, the House committee, overseeing the Department of Homeland Security. My very first show, in fact, my very first radio show in June 2003 was on the topic of Homeland Security because I was so upset that George Bush had threatened to veto a bill that would have bought up loose nukes in the former Soviet Union, that would have protected our chemical and nuclear plant from an attack, and that would have provided our first responders, our firemen, our police officers, with the kind of communications equipment they needed in an emergency. And I thought these things were non-controversial. I mean, we can disagree on abortion or gun control or any of those kinds of things, but I thought, hey, Homeland Security, that's something Democrats, Republicans both support. And I was shocked to see the president say, no, we can't have Homeland Security. I'm going to veto this. We got to do the tax cut. And John Kerry actually brought it up today. I was so proud. I was so honored to finally hear the arguments that I made a year ago that no one was really talking about brought to the fore, talking about the fact that under Kerry's plan, we can get rid of these loose nukes in 4 years rather than waiting 13 years, talking about the fact, as I mentioned way back in June 03, that if you're on an airplane, they check your shoes and they check your bags, but they don't check the mail packages, the cargo that goes underneath the jets. Now, if you're a terrorist, isn't it a lot easier to mail a package than even to be a suicide bomber? And I brought this up in June 03, and frankly, I thought the president would deny it. I thought he would deny that he threatened to veto this bill because of his tax cut, because he said it was too costly. The cost, by the way, was $4 billion. The cost in Iraq is $200 billion. George Bush doesn't want to spend 1/50th of what he spent in Iraq to help us here at home, right? So I thought that he would come back and say, you know, that's just not true. And yet, he basically admitted it. He said, well, you know, this thing costs too much. I was shocked because this, again, is an issue that really has gotten very little attention, and I was very proud of John Kerry for being the candidate to bring this issue forward, so crucial that everyone, every American, any right-minded thinking individual, left or right, I don't care what your views are, Democrat or Republican, how can you disagree with John Kerry when he says this?
As president, what would you do specifically in addition to or differently to increase the homeland security of the United States and what President Bush is doing?
Jim, let me tell you exactly what I'll do, and there are a long list of things. First of all, what kind of mixed message does it send when you've got $500 million going over to Iraq to put police officers in the streets of Iraq, and the president is cutting the COPS program in America? What kind of message does it send to be sending money to open firehouses in Iraq, but we're shutting firehouses who are the first responders here in America? The president hasn't put not one nickel, into the effort to fix some of our tunnels and bridges and most exposed subway systems. That's why they had to close down the subway in New York when the Republican convention was there. We haven't done the work that ought to be done. The president, 95% of the containers that come into the ports right here in Florida are not inspected. Civilians get onto aircraft and their luggage is x-rayed, but the cargo hold is not x-rayed. Does that make you feel safer in America? This president thought it was more important to give the wealthiest people in America a tax cut rather than invest in homeland security. Those aren't my values. I believe in protecting America first. And long before President Bush and I get a tax cut, and that's who gets it, long before we do, I'm going to invest in homeland security, and I'm going to make sure we're not cutting COPS programs in America, and we're fully staffed in our firehouses, and that we protect the nuclear and chemical plants. The president also, unfortunately, gave in to the chemical industry, which didn't want to do some of the things necessary to strengthen our chemical plant exposure. And there's an enormous undone job to protect the loose nuclear materials in the world that are able to get to terrorists. That's a whole other subject, but I see we still have a little bit more time. Let me just quickly say, at the current pace, the president will not secure the loose material in the former Soviet Union for 13 years. I'm going to do it in 4 years, and we're going to keep it out of the hands of terrorists.
90-second response, Mr. President.
I don't think we want to get to how he's going to pay for all these promises. It's like a huge tax gap, and anyway.
Now, did you catch that? Did you catch that offhand comment that George Bush made? It's really important. He says, I don't know how Kerry's going to pay for all this. I don't know how Kerry's going to pay for all this. $4 billion, and all it would do is protect us from a nuclear attack? All it would do is keep some terrorists from taking a truck bomb and blowing in our chemical plants, and, you know, it might save, what, 20, 30,000 American lives? What? $4 billion? That's way too expensive. Look at the tax gap, as George Bush put it. Look at the deficit. George Bush has expanded the deficit by $8 trillion. He took us from a $5 trillion surplus, which is what Clinton expected over the next 10 years, to an $8 trillion deficit. That's $13 trillion. But George Bush doesn't want to spend 1/3,000th of the amount of his deficit, largely spent on his tax cuts, in order to make our cargo safe, to make our planes safe, to force chemical plants with this awful regulation that would require them to harden their targets so that a Timothy McVeigh truck bomb can't come in, blow up the Indian River nuclear plant just outside New York City and kill thousands, tens of thousands. It's too expensive. I was shocked to hear Bush say that. I was shocked to have him admit that, I don't know he's going to pay for all this. How can we pay for communications equipment that would let firefighters in tall buildings know that they have to get out before the building collapses? 400 firefighters' lives. That's not worth it. No. We have to spend money on the tax cuts. Hundreds of billions of dollars on the tax cuts. Saving firefighters' lives in the World Trade Center? I don't care about firefighters. That throwaway comment by George Bush is very, very important. In fact, I'm going to try to play it again for you because I want you to hear how he derisively dismisses John Kerry's very serious points about Homeland Security, saying, I don't know, he's going to pay for all of that. When you're president of the United States, you have to make choices. You have to decide what it's worthy to pay for. And I'm going to try to play that again. Let's see if we can get that clip again. Here's George Bush responding to John Kerry's concern about Homeland Security.
Let me just quickly say, at the current pace, the president will not secure the loose material in the Soviet Union, former Soviet Union, for 13 years. I'm going to do it in 4 years, and we're going to keep it out of the hands of terrorists.
90-second response, Mr. President.
I don't think we want to get to how he's going to pay for all these promises. It's like a huge tax gap, and anyway, that's for another debate.
Okay, that's for another debate. The president that gave us the largest deficit in American history thinks Homeland Security is too expensive. And then he goes on and talks about the Homeland Security that was approved, and it should be clear that Bush opposed most of this, and he threatened to veto it if it was too expensive. This is an issue that I really think has to be very much put before the American people. Nuclear proliferation. In George Bush's first budget, he cut funds to go to stop nuclear proliferation by 35%. That's 1/3. All right? And again, what's going on here? I want to hear from you, though. I want to know, and I'll be talking more about the debate, a lot more than Homeland Security. There's a lot of issues to talk about. We don't have much time left, but I do want to hear 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. What did you think was the most important part of the debate? What was the most important line? I'm going to just start reading off a number of things that were said when we come back. And if you want to participate in the debate, you're welcome to do so. Again, toll free, 877-57-SCOOP. We'll be right back.
Thank you, Nicole and Jeff Rank, for standing your ground and standing up for all of us. This young couple from Charleston, West Virginia, was arrested on the state capitol grounds during a July 4th appearance by George W. They had come to see the press in person, but also to make a quiet statement of their own. They wore hand-painted T-shirts with the international no symbol slashed across Bush's name. That was it. They didn't shout, heckle, or disrupt anything. They simply wore T-shirts. but as they stood there peacefully, two Secret Service agents accosted them, demanding that their T-shirts be removed or covered. No, they quietly said. So the agents instructed local police to arrest them. They were handcuffed, jailed, and charged with trespassing. Nicole, who worked for a federal agency, was subsequently dismissed from her job. But the ranks, who had never before engaged in protest, fought the ridiculous trespassing charge, and now a local judge has thrown it out of court. Also, Charleston's embarrassed city council has publicly apologized for violating the ranks' First Amendment rights, noting that city police only acted because they were directed to do so by the Secret Service. And the federal agency backed down and rehired Nicole. Now, Nicole and Jeff are trying to stop the Bushites from stomping on other people's right to protest, as has been happening at Bush events all across the country. With the ACLU, the ranks have filed a federal lawsuit against both the White House and Secret Service, seeking a court order declaring such repressive political actions unconstitutional. Jeff, a registered Republican, says simply, "Unless common citizens like ourselves are willing to stand and fight for their civil liberties, those very liberties that our nation was founded upon, ideals of freedom that keep us strong today, will wither and erode until they are gone forever." This is Jim Hightower saying, thanks to the ranks for standing so tall.
38%.
46%.
42%.
I cut my payments in half.
How much can you cut your monthly student loan payments by refinancing with College Loan Corporation? To find out, just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will answer your questions and tell you how you can cut your monthly payment by up to 50% by refinancing your federal student loans at rates as low as 2.63%. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Your dog eats your new sofa. Pet satisfaction rating 3%. Your hairdresser doesn't know burnt auburn from burnt toast. Hair color satisfaction rating 5%. After years of marriage, your husband still leaves the seat up. Spouse satisfaction rating minus 2%. Your car insurance company saves you hundreds of dollars and handles your claim quickly and fairly. Car insurance satisfaction rating 97%. Oh, you must have Geico.
Geico's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? Geico. 1-800-947-AUTO.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, former congressional attorney Mark Levine, talking about the debate last night. Did you see it? What was your impression? I got a lot of comments on the blog. I want to read through some of them. But first, let's talk about the way the debate worked. It was very interesting to me because I feel like I was watching a lot of what happens right here on Election Tuesday. Kerry was giving, like I try to give, facts, statistics, one right after the other, all the ways which were not safe, all the ways in which George Bush miscalculated the war in Iraq, lots of specifics. And George Bush, he just repeated his stump slogans. He kept saying that, how can Kerry lead if he's changed his mind all the time? And he keeps repeating it again and again and again. And it was very clear, so many things that were really interesting. One was the Saddam Hussein, Osama bin Laden confusion. Kerry pointed out that we have 10 times the troops in Iraq that we do in Afghanistan. Does that mean that Saddam Hussein is 10 times more dangerous? And when Bush responded, talking about Iraq, he said the enemy attacked us. Kerry responded by saying, hey, that's a pretty revealing remark, given that Saddam Hussein didn't attack us, Osama bin Laden did, and George Bush had to respond very defensively, oh yeah, of course, I know Osama bin Laden attacked us. George Bush responded in very sort of a peevish fashion. He seemed to be upset that Kerry was challenging him. And I have to wonder if the Bush strategy of only trotting out the president in front of sympathetic audiences may well have backfired here. As you know, if you've listened to this broadcast, George Bush only speaks before people who agree with him. If you disagree with him, as we just heard in the Jim Hightower spot, if you disagree with the president, you're wearing simply a T-shirt that says you disagree with him, the Secret Service will arrest you. They will take you away. This has been going on long before the campaign. Indeed, we had a guest a year ago that had the audacity to show up at a public airport when the president was arriving, along with other members of the public, and he had a sign that said, no blood for oil, and he was arrested and charged with trespassing, threatened with up to 6 months in prison before the judge threw it out. This is a president who does not like people who disagree with him, doesn't want to hear from them. He's a don't bring me no bad news president. I'm sure he was not real happy with Colin Powell for telling him the truth before the war, just like he wasn't happy with CIA analysts like Richard Clark, who told him again and again and again there's no connection between Afghanistan and Iraq, and he said, go back. Bush said, go back and find it again. When you have the CIA telling him that the post-war, after removing Saddam Hussein, was going to be more dangerous and more anarchy and more of a threat to the United States, it was going to become a terrorist haven, George Bush says, well, they're just guessing. He doesn't like people who disagree with him. That's why if you want to go to a Bush rally, you have to sign a loyalty oath. You must be a supporter of his. And then he has these town hall meetings where they're only his supporters. I don't know if any of you have seen this on CNN or any of the other channels. And someone comes up there and he says, oh, Mr. President, I want to pray for you. Or, Mr. President, wasn't it really cool when you got to go to Iraq? These are very much softball questions. This is a president who won't appear for press conferences, hardly at all. He's done like 5 or 6. His father did 10 times that amount. Bill Clinton did 10 times that amount, maybe even more. This is a guy who can't handle tough questions. So when John Kerry came at him quite strongly, Bush responds in a kind of a peevish manner, kind of like he's not sure what to say or do when John Kerry comes after him. Let me see if I can play an exchange like that. Hang on.
I believe in being strong and resolute and determined, and I will hunt down and kill the terrorists wherever they are. But we also have to be smart, Jim. And smart means not diverting your attention from the real war on terror in Afghanistan against Osama bin Laden and taking it off to Iraq, where the 9/11 Commission confirms there was no connection to 9/11 itself in Saddam Hussein, and where the reason for going to war was weapons of mass destruction, not the removal of Saddam Hussein. This president has made, I regret to say, a colossal error of judgment. And judgment is what we look for in the President of the United States of America. I'm proud that important military figures are supporting me in this race. Former Chairman Joint Chiefs of Staff John Shalikashvili. Just yesterday, General Eisenhower finally changed his mind.
I'm going to move it ahead a little so we can hear Bush's response. And because I was surprised really by the tone as much as what Bush had to say.
Prescription drugs for seniors. And it's in Iraq. And Iraq is not even the center of the focus of the war on terror. The center is Afghanistan, where, incidentally, there were more Americans killed last year than the year before, where the opium production is 75% of the world's opium production, where 40 to 60% of the economy of Afghanistan is based on opium, where the elections have been postponed 3 times. The president moved the troops, so he's got 10 times the number of troops in Iraq than he has in Afghanistan, where Osama bin Laden is. Does that mean that Saddam Hussein was 10 times more important than Osama bin Laden?
The intelligence I looked at and declared in 2002 that Saddam Hussein was a grave threat. He also said in December of 2003 that anyone who doubts that the world is safer without Saddam Hussein does not have the judgment to be president. I agree with him. The world is better off without Saddam Hussein. I was hoping diplomacy would work. I understand the serious consequences of committing our troops into harm's way. It's the hardest decision a president makes. So I went to the United Nations. I didn't need anybody to tell me to go to the United Nations. I decided to go there myself. And I went there hoping that once and for all, the free world would act in concert to get Saddam Hussein to listen to our demands. They passed a resolution that said disclose, disarm, or face serious consequences. I believe when an international body speaks...
Can you hear the peevishness in his voice? Can you hear as he's saying, I said I'd do this. I use my judgment. It's an amazing kind of defensiveness that you really wouldn't expect from a president of the United States. Again, there's so much to talk about. Let's just mention a few more. I was very glad that John Kerry mentioned North Korea, mentioned a real nuclear threat to the United States. And I thought Bush had a hard time explaining his position on North Korea. I thought Kerry also very ably destroyed the notion that there was some grand coalition in Iraq. The president's supporters are always talking about a grand coalition, and as John Kerry pointed out, it was 3 countries when we first started the war: the United States, Britain, and Australia. And the president said, well, wait, what about Poland? Poland was there too. Actually, Mr. President, sorry. Actually, Poland wasn't there originally. They came in later with a few troops. But as John Kerry pointed out, 90% of the cost, 90% of the casualties, 90% are Americans. And that's just not the way we fought wars in the past. That's not the way we fought the Gulf War or the Bosnian War, where we had a grand alliance. So I do want to read, I did promise I'd read a lot of comments on the blog. Let me read a number of them to you. We have Scott Crawford. He says that Kerry demonstrated a thorough knowledge of the issues, stated his positions coherently and directly. He also was confident, comfortable, spoke in a natural, earnest manner. Bush seemed to repeat his basic talking points over and over. He seemed somewhat desperate and lost at times, seemed to be on the defensive much of the debate. He seemed flustered and angry and at times and demonstrated a lot of the telltale signs of someone who's uncomfortable or even untruthful. Moving his mouth a lot, blinking, smirking, swallowing, hunching over the podium. I don't know about you, but I seem to notice that Bush was peeking down at his notes, almost like a cheat sheet. He would stumble, didn't know what to say, and then he would look down and come up with something. You have to wonder about that. Ilona writes, tonight, what a night. My only regret was that Bush didn't take John Kerry's challenge a long time ago to a series of weekly debates. Maria Wells writes, I'm embarrassed to have George W. Bush as our president. Not since Admiral Stockdale have I feared for the safety of the United States upon seeing a presidential or vice presidential debate. The man cannot form a complete sentence. John Kerry, on the other hand, surprised me with his short, to-the-point answers. I've never been a John Kerry fan, but he sure came across as presidential in this debate. I'm proud to have John Kerry as my president. I have no more doubts about Senator Kerry. Michelle writes, greetings, Mark. Thanks to your online radio segment, this year is the first year that I'm making the most sound and knowledgeable decision in my life regarding who I want to lead my country. I came across your online radio segment by pure luck or destiny, and I want to express my thanks. My question to you is, Bush in the debate last night stated with conviction that Kerry's attempt to have a bilateral relationship with North Korea and China would be a big mistake. Why would he say that? If you can, please explain why George Bush would say that. Again, thank you for hosting a wonderful show. Well, Michelle, Bush's position on North Korea is clear. It is, I don't want to do what Clinton did. Because Clinton is, of course, the big bogeyman. He's the horror of the conservatives. Bush wanted to do something different. Now, what did Bill Clinton do? Bill Clinton recognized that North Korea was wanting to develop nuclear weapons. And so he made a deal with North Korea, a deal that prevented war. And he said, all right, we're going to have inspections. Sound familiar? We're going to be inside your nuclear plants with cameras. And we're going to check to make sure that you don't take the steps of making nuclear weapons and that this is a peaceful facility. And like it or not, that was the Clinton plan. And, Bush didn't want to do the Clinton plan. So right when we started getting involved in Iraq, and I remember this because I remember sitting in my office, the congressional office, I would even answer phones on occasion saying, hey, 23 days till North Korea has nuclear weapons, 19 days till North Korea has nuclear weapons, because we all knew North Korea was developing them. Why? Because North Korea said, you got to throw out the cameras, throw out the inspectors. Now, they breached the deal we made with them. If Bill Clinton had been president, I'm sure we would have taken military action, as we did, frankly, when Iraq didn't want our inspectors. We bombed the last remains of his weapons of mass destruction. I think it's appropriate right now, call me hawk if you want, to bomb the Yongbyon nuclear plant. It would have been better 2 years ago, certainly, when Bush was president, to stop them from developing nuclear weapons. This, after all, is what Israel did to stop Iraq from getting nuclear weapons way back in 1982. The president did nothing. And I think he's embarrassed by the fact that he did nothing. And North Korea knew our military was overstretched in Iraq, and so he did nothing about it. Now, why is he fighting Kerry now? Because Kerry understands that not only does he, but all of our allies, China and Japan, all of them want us to have direct talks with North Korea so that we can put everything on the table, including ending the Korean War. And clearly then, if they refuse, they're the bad guys. But right now, we're the bad guys, right? The whole world's saying, well, you won't even talk to North Korea. And so the world is doing nothing about North Korea's nuclear weapons. It is a severe problem. North Korea can hit Los Angeles. They are selling weapons abroad. Talk about nuclear proliferation. They just sent a ship to Yemen. They sent a ship there that we intercepted and Bush let go. if you're really worried about Homeland Security, if you're really worried about nuclear proliferation, you got to get rid of this president. Because he went after a country that was not a terrorist threat to the United States of any significance, Iraq. It did not have any weapons of mass destruction. And he's ignoring the real threats that we face, Iran and North Korea. And I think John Kerry made that very clear last night. It was very, very strong. Or as Fred in New York City says, Mark, what can we say that isn't obvious? I caught part of Fox's coverage after C-SPAN re-ran the debate, and even an atomic-powered spin machine couldn't redefine what occurred. My prediction is that conservatives and corporate media sources are going to stop reporting on this story in a day or two. Spinning won't stick, so I'd expect a more pressing news story to arise. The thing is, regardless of how they play it, the next debates are just around the corner. And they are around the corner. Tuesday is the vice presidential debate, Friday is the second presidential debate, and then the last debate will be in a couple weeks. I'm going to be gone. I'm going to be in San Diego attending a broadcasters convention. Unfortunately, I'd rather be on the radio talking with you about the debates. There will be a show this Sunday at 7 p.m. My guest, Jimmy Walter, is going to talk about his view that the 9/11 attacks were, well, not an accident. That perhaps our president actually allowed them to occur. I'm skeptical. I don't like George Bush. I'm skeptical that he's that evil. But I want to hear all sides. It's something that my listeners have requested. And he'll be on this Sunday, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. You won't want to miss the next edition of the Inside Scoop. As I close, I want to close, as I've often done in this election period, by quoting John Kerry. I believe he was quoting someone else, but I think